You're listening to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Martha's Vineyard isn't just a hotspot for summer visitors. It's also a hotspot for Lyme disease. That, plus the fact that it's an island, make it the perfect laboratory for experimenting with novel ways to stop the spread of Lyme disease. And Kevin Esfeldt of MIT's Media Lab has a particularly innovative and potentially controversial idea about how to do just that. Esfeldt's idea is to genetically modify mice to make them permanently and heritably immune to Lyme disease. He and others from his research group meet regularly with community members on Martha's Vineyard to update and educate them and to hear their questions, concerns, and ideas about the proposed project. Kevin Esfeldt joins me now for our own update. Kevin, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for the invitation.
Your idea is kind of like giving the mice a vaccine, but instead of just giving them a shot and having that last their lifetime, you would actually genetically modify the mice to make them permanently immune to Lyme disease, and that immunity would be passed on to their offspring. Is that an accurate summary of the idea that you're pursuing?
That's broadly correct. Now, this is a refinement. We basically laid several different ideas in front of the communities, both of the Vineyard and Nantucket, on a number of town halls starting about 2 years ago, and said, in effect, we think any of these are possible. Which ones would you want? And what they said was, we would definitely like you to immunize them against Lyme disease. We would like you to immunize them against ticks as well, if that's possible. But we would prefer that you not use any DNA from anything other than a white-footed mouse.
And what is the difference between immunizing against Lyme versus immunizing against ticks?
So Lyme is caused by Borrelia burgdorferi, which is a particular bacterial pathogen. It's a spirochete bacterium. So the idea for immunizing against Lyme is just that, immunize the mice against the pathogen itself. Immunizing them against ticks involves teaching their immune system to detect tick molecules for when a tick bites them and mount an immune response strong enough, and this really does seem like magic, to force the tick to fall off before it gets a full blood meal and therefore would cause it to die.
Wow.
So this would be ideal because it would block the spread of all diseases transmitted by deer ticks, not just Lyme disease. So that would be perfect. What we don't know is whether the immune response is mediated by the kind of recognition molecule that we can make heritable.
And how does making mice immune, as opposed to, you know, getting people vaccinated, stop the spread of those diseases?
So the mice are the primary reservoir of all diseases spread by deer ticks. That is, the typical infected tick gets infected when it bites a mouse. So if you immunize the mice, which are the main reservoir of these diseases, they're the best at transmitting them to ticks, and they're the best at being infected themselves. And they're not incidentally affected by disease on their own. If you immunize them so they can't infect the ticks anymore, then you disrupt the transmission cycle of disease. No infected ticks, no infected kids.
So if you make your immune mice in the lab, and then the idea is you would release, what, 10, 100, 1,000 of these immune mice onto Martha's Vineyard into the wild, the idea is that immunity would then spread out to most of the population?
So just to be clear, it would be reckless to do any such thing on the vineyard. That is, ecosystems are complicated. We don't completely know what will happen. This should be a very minor change. In fact, it's designed to be the smallest possible change that could solve the problem. Because anytime you're engineering a system you don't completely understand, that's what you should do. The other rule is that you have to start small and local and see what happens before scaling up, because we don't know for sure what would happen. So the other reason we're working with the communities is people who live in an area know more about the environment than we do. And so we want to hear what needs to be looked at in the small scale field trials on mostly uninhabited islands that would involve releasing the mice on those islands and seeing what happens. Does it work? Does the number of infected ticks decrease? By how much? Does anything else happen in terms of the other animals that share the ecosystem with mice? Should we be looking just at the predators that eat the mice? Should we be looking at other things that the ticks bite? What concerns do people have that independent scientists monitoring the field trial should be taking a look at? And we already have had a case where at a town hall meeting, a resident suggested something that might go wrong that we hadn't anticipated. And so that's what we want. That's why we keep going back to the communities, because not only is it your environment and your call, and if the communities ever say stop, then that's it. We walk away. The project is governed by steering committees appointed by the boards of health, and they're completely in charge. But it's also that we hope to hear every concern that anyone might have so that we can look into them all, and then the communities will be able to make a good decision, as well informed as possible.
Where are you in this process of exploring the possibilities? You've been talking to the community, as you said, for about 2 years. Sounds like, you know, you've planned what this would look like, but have you actually started making the mice?
So what we've done is we've immunized the mice against Lyme disease in the lab, and then we've taken the recognition molecules that they've evolved, and we've isolated their immune cells that produce those, and we've pulled out sequences that we believe are protective against Lyme disease.
So you've kind of figured out the maybe target or what you would be looking to genetically modify.
We at least have candidates. We haven't had the chance to test them in detail yet. That's what's next. We're also looking at different ways of encoding these protective sequences into the mice so that it will be transmitted. These are white-footed mice. They're native here to North America. These are actually more distant from laboratory mice than mice are from rats. So no one has engineered them before, so we need to work out how to do that. Fortunately, they're still rodents, and we're generally pretty good at engineering rodents, but we do have to work it out.
As you've been talking with communities on Martha's Vineyard, I mean, sounds like you're proceeding with the work, and you did say you have heard some ideas about things that could go wrong, presumably some concerns, but what has the overall response been? Has it been a positive response that this is something that people feel relatively comfortable with?
It's really too early to say, because even though we've held a lot of town hall meetings and presentations and panels and talks, and we've been working with some students at the Martha's Vineyard Regional High School with Dr. Carrie Feiler, who's the AP biology teacher there. She and her students have been studying our proposals and the project as a whole and came up with this amazing pamphlet called No Time for Lyme to help educate the community about the problem and how tick-borne disease works and what the project is trying to do. But we've still only reached a tiny fraction of the community. So we're now at the point where many people have at least heard of it, but they don't know very much about it. And responses are really all over the place. But what we haven't really heard yet is someone saying, you shouldn't even continue looking at this. That is, everyone is interested enough to say, you should keep doing research and see. We might end up voting against it, but we're not going to reject the concept out of hand, because tick-borne disease is a really severe problem. I mean, Lyme disease is the most common vector-borne disease in the United States, and the Vineyard has it not quite the worst in the country, but pretty close to it. And Lyme isn't the only problem, so if we could address the others, then people view that as a good thing. But I want to be clear, this is not a reason to stop taking precautions now. That is, people should still be doing tick checks, they should be wearing appropriate permethrin-treated clothing, they should treat their yards in ways that reduce the likelihood of ticks coming in. In fact, it would perhaps be wise, we would certainly prefer it, if Islanders really stepped up their tick control efforts. So then you could say, you know, we've tried everything that there is available, and only if it's not enough should you consider something like engineering all of the mice.
There's been so much, concern and pushback against genetically modified foods, and yet you're finding communities that might be willing to have you release genetically modified organisms into the wild. Do you think that signals a shift in public opinion about genetic modification in general? Or do you think that's the result of how you carry out these conversations and better understanding on the part of the public about these projects?
I think it's the latter. That is, people who have profound concerns about genetically modified foods are still interested in talking about the notion of altering wild organisms in their environment in order to benefit public health, for example. People don't necessarily see them as connected. And scientifically, it depends entirely on, well, what is the change? I mean, we've been sculpting evolution for tens of thousands of years. Look at dogs. Look at all of our crops. The question is, how do you do it? And people do have profound concerns about GM foods, in large part because they were never consulted. So I think that to the extent that we're getting a different answer, it's because A, we're nonprofit. B, we go to the communities first before the technology even exists and say, out of these options, out of these different ways of doing it, are you interested enough for us to even begin? But also, which one would you prefer? And the idea is that the communities would have a say in sculpting the evolution of the technology. And we view that as a new way of doing community responsive science. And it's an experiment in and of itself. That is, we think that it's unethical to develop a technology that's intended to affect the shared environment if you don't disclose what you're planning to do in advance and invite feedback from the people it's going to affect. Because it may go up for a vote in your town, hopefully it would, but if the town votes in favor and you vote against, you're going to be affected anyway. And because people can't opt out, that means we have to ensure that everyone has a voice from the earliest stages, because it's some of those key early research decisions that affect how the application turns out, how the environment will eventually be changed.
This is a model of doing science that you've not only adopted, but you are really pushing. But the work of actually genetically modifying an organism, especially, as you said, these white-footed mice, is not easy. It's time-consuming. It's expensive. And it may never get used. How do you, and for that matter, funders, feel about that?
It's a question of relative risk, because as we all know, science is hard and experiments fail. In fact, experiments fail more often than they succeed. So we always go into projects knowing that they might fail, that we might end up wasting our time. What's more, I think I'd be uncomfortable doing it any other way, because we scientists must hold ourselves morally responsible for the consequences of our work. And that means I'm uncomfortable with doing anything in a way that would deny people a voice, or doing something without inviting suggestions from the people who know the environment best.
That's Kevin Esfeldt of MIT's Media Lab talking about his project to possibly genetically modify mice to make them immune to Lyme disease. Kevin, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Heather.
Up next, a new film explores what it might be like to live without pain. Living Lab Radio continues after a short break.